I'm Bill Smith from the National Coalition of STD Directors, and we're going to be presenting on a little bit of a different sort of model than the rest, which is really reporting on a collaboration that we undertook as organizations to promote sexual and reproductive health in the South that we hope you find some resonance for modeling within your own communities. And I'm being joined by my amazing and longtime friend Claire Coleman from the National Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that behind the two of us are really incredible colleagues and staff at both organizations, as well as our third partner, which I'll say more about, that make this happen. And I'm staring at Stephanie Arnold Pang from my staff in the audience, and we've got great staff who have helped make these meetings happen. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the what and the why we undertook these meetings, and then Claire's going to take over and talk a little bit about the outcomes. So as I said, we did two meetings organized by NCSD, NIFRA, and the New Morning Foundation. So very briefly, NCSD represents state and local health departments across the country and the staff working in them. The National Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association represents Title X grantees and the leading voice on Title X advocacy and family planning. And the New Morning Foundation is a South Carolina-based philanthropic organization who funds sexual and reproductive health work primarily in South Carolina, but increasingly with a regional focus in the South. So why did we decide to do this? And why focus on the South in particular, given that we're two national organizations? The first is that the sexual health outcomes in the South are particularly poor, and I don't think that's a surprise to any of you. So whether you're thinking about HIV, STDs, unintended pregnancies, or utilization of contraception, the South has some work to do. We're also very focused on changes in the healthcare system and felt like this was a good time for us to be focused on this region, not the least of which because most of the states in the region are not doing Medicaid expansion in the midst of ACA and other healthcare reforms across the country. And we felt as national organizations we might be able to bring something a little additional to bear to improve outcomes in that jurisdiction. And number three, the possibility of missed opportunities. And I would say that this is really key for us, and primarily missed opportunities in the sense that we're all working in our silos. And I see heads shaking all across the room. So I think as national organizations, what we've tried to do is to emulate the type of action that we think gets us out of our silos. So this was really important for us to take advantage of HIV, family planning, domestic and intimate partner violence, going beyond just public health departments and really focusing on public-private partnerships was also key for us. So we had community health centers present, other large FQHCs, reproductive justice organizations, really trying to create a pretty strong mix for these meetings that we felt could help advance a sexual and reproductive health agenda. The last piece I just wanted to add on why we decided on the South really relates to these two organizations and our partner at New Morning, which is we are dogged defenders of protecting, saving, and strengthening the safety net for sexual health services. And we felt as national organizations that there was some activity that we really had a moral imperative to undertake in the region. The purpose of the meeting was, this is what we shared with our attendees, was to gather stakeholders engaged in efforts to support and expand sexual and reproductive health as a way to share information and foster opportunities for coordination to improve health outcomes and ensure the accessibility of high-quality sexual and reproductive health services in the represented southern states. And Claire's going to say a little bit more about this, but what we were really focused on as national organizations is not coming in and trying to say that we know what should be done, but coming in as national organizations and empowering partners on the ground and doing some very deliberate table setting that we hope would create some solid outcomes. We held two meetings. The first was in September 2013, and the second was in February of this year. You see the title there. The first meeting was held in Charleston, South Carolina, and included North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. And we chose those states in particular because we felt like there was some cohesiveness among that group. And then the second meeting involved Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Louisiana. I'm going to turn it over to Claire to talk a little bit about what happened and some of the outcomes. The only thing that I wanted to say that we don't have a lot of time to talk about the actual process of what happened at the meeting, but let me underscore this. We've already talked about the table setting. This was not a meeting where people came and were talked to like I'm doing to you right now. Almost the entire meeting was spent in small groups and really having family planning, STD leads, HIV leads, CBO and ASO partners sitting down and talking with one another within their jurisdictions to come up with new and model ways to move the agenda forward. We have a larger agenda, and Claire's going to talk a little bit about some of the resource materials that we have available. But I'll stop there and turn it over to Claire to talk about what these meetings resulted in.
Thanks very much. I want to follow on what Bill said about the importance of setting the table and the provider focus. We really intended to have a meeting and not a conference. So in both meetings, and one had five states, one had six states, we kept the groups from the states themselves to less than 50. And so that meant that we had a smattering, a representative smattering, as I used to call it, of the provider network in that state. All of these states have a very heavy public health engagement, a governmental focus in its health service delivery, and we were very gratified to see that our public health partners from all the jurisdictions were able to participate. So many of you around the country who work in governmental settings talked to us about the challenge of being allowed to travel and allowed to participate. We underwrote the entire cost of participation, which did help people say yes, but there is still that challenge of getting permission. And so we put together a fairly articulated agenda that showed how much time people would spend with each other. And at state after state, not in every state, but in more states than perhaps you might expect, folks came to us during the meeting and said, I've been working in public health, in the health department for 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 18 years. I have never met my counterpart in X. Whether it be I'm in STDs and I met my family planning counterpart, or I'm the HIV program director and I've never met the person who runs family planning. So even within a state health department setting, again and again, people told us they had never had the opportunity to sit and spend time together thinking about sexual health as a range of issues and talk about what they had in common and what was different. You're not going to be surprised to hear that they had a lot more in common than they have different. And so I want to talk about a couple of things that came out that I think are incredibly practical, and I'm going to use the state of Georgia because we're here in the state of Georgia. So one of the things we noticed right away in the meeting is as we broke people into small groups and each state had a moderator that stayed with the state for the entire two-day process to make sure they ran on time, but also to take their notes so they could have a conversation and not be focused on who was going to report out. So in those state conversations, problems emerged almost immediately, and a lot of them were incredibly practical. So for example, we have family planning providers across this region, but I'm talking about the state of Georgia, that don't get access to 340B federal nominal pricing. And just by having one-on-one conversations inside the state of Georgia in the breakout groups, the STD program was able to make a connection for family planning service providers that then would lead to access into federally sponsored nominal drug pricing. For one entity in the state of Georgia, they said that could help them to the tune of $1 million a year, given the size of their service delivery and the number of patients that they serve. So we immediately saw impacts inside the meeting, the sort of breaking down of silos and the conversation about how they could help each other. I also wanted to mention a couple of things that came out that were related to concerns about funding sources shifting or grant money drying up. And so one group member had lost funds to do HIV testing, but another person from that same state had resources available to underwrite just those sort of things. So just because they got into the room together meant that they were able to have the conversation about what the needs were. And the last example that we have from, again, happening in or after the meeting was we had one sexual and reproductive health focused CBO that came and participated and said, you know, we can't, our condom costs are rising like you can't believe. So we're either going to stop distributing free condoms or we're going to limit the distribution. That's a challenge that a lot of us in service delivery have had. And the state STD director was able to say, that's not going to be needed. We're going to be able to provide you with an affordable source of condoms and a steady supply. So that's just, those are three examples that come just out of the state of Georgia. Georgia has done a really good job at following on. So one of the first things they did at the meeting was agree that they wanted to create a listserv to keep themselves in touch when they went back to their desks, but also to hold themselves accountable. We had asked every state to consider whether or not they could set a similar table at home. Each state only had 5 or 6 representatives of the entire state's SRH at this table, and we acknowledged from the start that it was inadequate. But we weren't trying to run one perfect meeting for Georgia. We were trying to run a meeting that could engage 5, 6, and 6 states at a time. And so from the get-go, we said, we know we just put folks at the table from Georgia, from Alabama, from Mississippi, from Louisiana, that you might not have chosen. Your challenge is to go home and recreate the table. So the first thing they've done is created a listserv where they can talk to each other and push each other. The next thing that they've been doing is meeting informally. So when they catch each other at events, they talk. And now they've established a formal work group for the state of Georgia, dedicated to improving sexual and reproductive health in the state. And now they're inviting other colleagues in other organizations, governmental entities, CBOs and ASOs to set their table appropriately, to do it the way Georgia would do it or Mississippi would do it or Alabama would do it, because they're best to decide who the partners are have to be at the table. Bill mentioned that we have a resource available. What we did is created a toolkit for how you create that meeting at home. And NIFR took the lead on establishing this, and so some of the terminology is very family planning oriented, but if you take the family planning out and throw the HIV and the STDs in, it works for everybody. It talks about how you set the table, how you invite people, how you set an agenda, how you moderate it, and then how you guide people to use their time together as best as possible. And that toolkit has been presented now a couple of times around the country, and it's on the NIFR website. It's available if you would like to see it. So we're very happy to have the chance to talk about this work. We're hopeful to continue it. And I have to say, for those of you who are working in one of these southern states or any other, bless you for the hard work that you do.
Go together. Question.
Hi, I'm Anna Newton-Levinson from DSTDB and as well from Emory soon. I'm really excited to hear about this meeting. It's really thrilling, and I'm about to be starting work in the South with a bunch of these states, so I really look forward to hearing more about it. I was wondering, do you have any comments you could give about the interaction between public health, sort of the government level organization, and the non-government attendees, and whether you had challenges or if there are kind of lessons learned that came out of that in terms of working together better in the future?
Yeah, we could. So here's what I would say is that we were very deliberate when we were cherry picking and choosing people to attend, that this was a public-private discourse. And if you were interested in coming to pillory my member in the health department or the health department generally and have an axe to grind, this is not the place for you. So I would say that in the meeting session itself, and maybe that's important just in terms of how we constructed the meeting planning, but I felt like those dynamics were somewhat limited, although I know there were a number of cases where they were not, so maybe you will address some of those.
Yeah, I would speak to it more from the NGO perspective. One of the things that was really interesting was how many NGOs said, you know, I've been trying to get a meeting with X, and they won't return my phone call, or I can't get through to them, or they're not interested in talking to us, because of this perception that working family planning, STDs, HIV is controversial. And so you couldn't get the prospective partner in the health department to talk to you. And so there were a whole bunch of folks who said to us, this is the first opportunity that I've ever had to talk to this person. And in the sessions that I moderated, because Bill and I each moderated different states, I did see some pressure and some crosstalk. And frankly, that's part of what a moderator was there to do. And frankly, once we did the Charleston meeting, when we went into New Orleans for the second meeting, I was much more activist in that room to say, really? You don't think you can help them figure that out? Because when we were in Charleston, so we were able to use the first 5 states sort of leveraging with the second 6 to say, you know, there's been really interesting things coming out of Georgia, coming from Mississippi, you ought to really consider. And one of the things I did, sorry, was we passed out a lot of contact information to say, you don't think you can do that? Well, a colleague in Alabama is doing it now. So here is how you can reach him, or here's how you can reach her.
Any other questions?
Thanks. That was wonderful to hear. First question, when are you coming to Region 3 to do the same thing? I mean, you know, frankly, for those of us who used to be in the IPP world,
yeah,
those regional meetings were critical, yeah, critical vehicles and mechanisms for information sharing, communication. Why are you smiling at each other? Is there something we need to know?
No. Well, we love each other, but we're in that same place. So Elizabeth, I'll let you finish your question, and then I'll go.
No. So what you're doing now sounds like it's what we used to do with IPP in some respects, and you know, this sounds like a replicable model. And what you did, by virtue of being there and driving the boat or the plane or whatever vehicle you want to call it, helped set the stage. So those of us in states where we want to do the same kind of work, we're doing it subtly, maybe underground a little bit. It would really help us if you come in and say, at the national level, we're helping this regional effort get started. And because we, you know, it's not so easy for all of us to reach out to FQHCs. We don't know which ones to choose. I think we have some 200 or 300 in Maryland, for instance.
Yeah.
How do we know which ones to go to? And you know, things are crumbling. You know, it's like plate tectonics, like major seismic shifts underneath our feet. And so leadership is changing, and relationships are changing, and things are eroding, but new things are forming. But it would really, really help if someone else were to come in and say, here's what we're doing, and it worked here, and it worked there, and here's the toolkit, as opposed to us having to do it on our own. So I would just say, you know, think about, like, finding a pot of gold and coming to Region 3 first, of course. So
I think Region 8 will fight you for that, actually.
Well, it just sounds amazing. Thank you for sharing all this information.
Absolutely. So just a couple quick points. So we have thought about Region 3. As it relates to the MCSD annual meeting, which is happening in October, and trying to figure out if we might be able to do something with the region then. I would say that it is, I am fully cognizant now of what we lost when IPP went away. Not just the bigger picture stuff, but the human interaction that happens in a region that improves program STD program outcomes and gets us involved with our family planning partners, our lab partners. And for us, this is a much larger rubric, right? So we're trying to bring in a bunch of others within a sexual health sort of umbrella to even create perhaps, you know, sort of this larger agenda moving forward. As Claire said, we are both really continuing to push this along. And I will say we were very happy to have attracted a large reproductive and sexual health donor to fund the second meeting. But it was a hard sell. So maybe what we'll be able to do sort of going forward is to talk about, you know, the excitement and the need that we see when we're out talking about this. But also if you want to, and I know then it's this piece, but if you want to do it on your own, we can also help figure that out if you want to figure out how to do it within your state or within your region. Yeah, I know. Do you want to say?
And that was the primary concern. As soon as we rolled out this plan, there were lots of questions about why just the South, why not our region? And that's what made NIFR want to do the toolkit right away, because the fact is, on the family planning side, if you look at our federal data, our colleagues in the South consistently participate less often in every kind of opportunity. They come to conferences less often, they call into webinars less often, they join conference calls less often, and it doesn't matter if it's free, and it doesn't matter how often it's repeated. And so I think part of our take was that let's try going to them. And we had incredible uptake and interest and attentive participation. So I think it's a lot, you know, it's a money issue, right? There are so many ways in which, even at this conference, the number one takeaway will be, I spent, you know, 5 hours in the hall, and it's gonna drive my work for the next 8 or 9 months. So anytime we can be person to person together, it's gonna be the richest interaction we have.
Thank you, and I just want to...
we'll stick around.
Yeah, well, why don't we just ask the authors to stick around. If people have questions, they can ask them afterwards, and just let's give a hand to all the presenters. We have some great presentations.